broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
Just to start, the first question I wanted to ask, and one thing I was curious about, is just if you could tell me about the advocacy that led up to you putting forward this motion. When did you first decide that this was something that you wanted to pursue?
Well, it's sort of been a long time coming in terms of, you know, COPE and my party has long advocated for affordable transit. My predecessor, Gene Swanson, as a part of a campaign called All On Board, was able to get free transit for kids under 12. Of course, you know, there's an opportunity to increase that to teens as well, up to under 18, and that's something that I've been looking at. Really, it was this group called Movement, Metro Vancouver Transit Riders, and they've just been doing a lot of advocacy around the low-income transit pass. I met with them, last fall, and they had a number of sort of like asks for transit, and I was heading to UBCM, and I said I'd try and raise it with the minister, and I did. But you have, like, at UBCM you have like 5 minutes in a room with all the counselors and one MLA, and it's really difficult to get anything in there. So I decided to move a motion on it, and I did a bit of research and looked at all the other cities that are doing it, and Vancouver's one of the only cities in Canada that isn't doing it. And I thought, you know, we should be leaders in this and not sort of playing catch up. I think, you know, this is especially one of the most expensive cities on the planet, let alone in Canada. So it's just it just seemed like a no brainer. And I'd been sitting on it for a while, actually. You know, the way that council moves, you sort of. You're trying to plan like your weeks, and I knew there was only a few coming up because, you know, FIFA's here, and so there isn't a lot of meetings during this time. The next one is actually July 15th, and in July, I think 28th or 29th is the last meeting before the election, the last chance. So I was just trying to strategize when to fit it in, and I did so the other day, and it passed. But it passed with some amendments, of course.
That was just another thing I wanted to ask about, just how you felt about those amendments that were made.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of a larger trend that the majority does. There's actually an article about it in the Georgia Strait about how if they don't want to look bad voting no on something, they'll just amend it to sort of be meaningless or just water it down. I mean, there was, I think the biggest one, and the one that spurred the article was a motion by Councillor Fry, actually, to amend asking for a sex worker planning position. And that really initiated the article. But, I mean, this is a practice that has been going on for months. They just, you know, really weaken a motion, and, you know, they'll change anything if it has, anything monetary to do with the city. They'll be like, no, they'll cut that out. And so in this case, you know, we were looking at, you know, grants. We were looking at, staff time and things like that. So they switched it to just purely an advocacy motion, and I'm fine with that. It didn't really gut the motion like some of the other times when they do it, or like cooling kits where they... No, we need emergency funding for cooling kits because this is going to be one of the hottest summers on record, and this isn't a lot of money. We should do an emergency motion to fund this, and they didn't. And they just said, let's send a memo, and it was, you know, so they didn't completely gut my motion. So I was fine to vote in favor of the amendment and just get it going, and like just, you know, put it back into TransLink sort of lap, so to speak, because, you know, they're aware of this. They've approached this subject before. I think in 2024 they've looked at it, you know, and that's a larger question around TransLink funding, which I'm happy to sort of go into as well. But
with TransLink in particular, it always feels like every fee increase is sort of given with this reasoning behind, like, we, you know, we just don't have enough money for these projects and for to maintain the infrastructure that we do have. So therefore, like, this is the reason for the increase. And the reason for this low-income transit pass is just that for a lot of Vancouverites, that's not a sustainable practice.
I mean, 4% last year or 5% this year. I mean, and to the pass alone, that's $120 extra a year for the BC or for a pass. I mean, that's a big chunk of change for people, right? Everything else is going up. Food prices are going up. You know, rent, of course, is going up. Even though they say rents are down, it's not true. That's a whole nother episode, I'm sure. But yeah, it's frustrating. So that's why I brought this in. It's frustrating in a number of ways, just because I don't think TransLink is necessarily like a badly managed company or anything like that. And you know, you go to other cities and then you come back to Vancouver, and we do have an incredible transit system. There's gaps, absolutely. There's things we need. We need bus priority signals on, you know, 49th. We need bus rapid transit and things like that. There's a laundry list of things that we could improve, but of course, yeah, funding is always the question at the end of the day. And you know, I think it was 2014 or so where I'm not sure, but there was a referendum in Vancouver to increase the sales tax by 0.5%, and that would have fully funded transit, like they're asked. You know, it's here's the thing: you never put taxation to a referendum. 9 times out of 10, that's going to fail. And I think Christy Clark at the time was the premier, and I think she knew that. I think she knew that it was going to fail, so that she didn't, you know, have to. She could say, "Well, the people decided," you know. It's just like, that's, no one's ever going to vote for more taxes, right? And it became a referendum, unfortunately, on TransLink. It became a referendum on whether we like TransLink, and that wasn't the question. The question was, should we fund transit? You know, and so that became politicized, and that was a mess. But even going further back, 1993, and I think I said this in council because Sarah Kirby-Young brought up the funding question in council. And, you know, 1993, the NDP proposed a new vehicle levy, I think for all of Metro Vancouver, which would have been done through ICBC. And I think it was at the time, it was $75 for every new vehicle, I believe. And that's in like $93, right? So, I mean, that's 30 years where we could have had consistent funding for transit. We could have SkyTrain out to Chilliwack, you know, with that kind of money, right? Like, it's just, you know, and it's just this political sort of cowardice that happens. There was this backlash, you know, from drivers. Oh, why should I be paying for poor people to take the bus kind of thing, you know? And, you know, and so the NDP caved. Back then, so they caved to that, but you know, and then it became an election issue in this last election, and where there was, you know, Kennedy Stewart was entertaining the idea of looking at congestion pricing, and then ABC kind of put up these billboards, Kennedy's road tax, and it really freaked people out. And so, like, yeah, there's this kind of perennial kind of populist kind of rhetoric that goes into transportation, unfortunately, and this kind of, you know, this weird battle between car drivers and transit, even though it's actually harmonious, and the more people that take transit, the better traffic will be, and the better, you know, like, just the other day we saw ABC, you know, kind of gut a Vision Zero mobility plan, safety plan. They changed... We were looking, the plan looked for like select streets. I think it was like commercial high streets. So think like Commercial Drive, you know, Denman, Robson, and going down to like 30 kilometers an hour. You know, and then they put out this post saying, you know, the non-ABC counselors want to slow you down or something like that, and they want all arterial streets to be 30 kilometers. And like, first of all, it was a staff report. It wasn't a opposition motion. It was just, and secondly, that's just, you're just lying to people now. So you're, you know, and they're just lying to their base and they're riling their base up. So there's a lot of like, there's a lot of that that comes with transportation. Unfortunately, there's just a ton of politicization of it, especially the funding side of things. You know, it's really frustrating. You know, cities in Europe, obviously, and cities across Canada too, they just do it, you know, and it's just this culture shift that happens, you know, like Amsterdam in the 70s didn't look like Amsterdam now. And it took political will, it took big thinking and long-term thinking. And unfortunately, in politics, long-term thinking is often lacking because we're just thinking about the next election, right?
I think it's very easy for people's perceptions of transportation to be really skewed. Because I think, you know, when you think about it, anyone who's ever driven, I think, has been in a situation where someone has sped up and cut them off just to, like, end up at the same red light.
Yeah.
And showing that, like, there are studies, there are verifiable pieces of evidence that show that slowing down roads in different areas don't actually affect your commute to the extent that some would just assume off of just thinking like, oh, slow equals bad.
Yeah. And staff actually described that in the council meeting. You know, if you're driving faster, you have to leave more room. So there's these big gaps. And then, you know, but if you're driving slower, you've actually got more vehicle density in that same stretch of road. There's more vehicles that can travel along that stretch of road. And they're also looking at signal priorities and in terms of basically creating a green wave, but like a slower green wave, right? So like you said, where people speed up and just hit a red light and they speed up and hit a red light, you know, no, it'd be like a 40 kilometer hour green wave on select streets. Again, not every street, but select streets. Streets like Hastings. Hastings is already, you know, it's 30 kilometers an hour down there, and nobody goes 30 kilometers an hour. I think Movement or Vision Zero Vancouver, the advocacy group, looked at some stats, and I think 75% of people go over 60 or something like that. I don't have the stats. It's just, it's wild, and it's the deadliest corridor in Canada for pedestrian deaths. And it's because it looks and feels like a highway, like it's huge. And well, it technically is a highway route, which is why it's difficult for the city to kind of do any kind of implementation. It actually is a provincial road, not a city road, but that's a different kind of can of worms to open. But and so I voted for this. I'm talking less about the transit pass now and just talking about Vision Zero, but I voted for that, to receive that, and I voted against, you know, lowering or having speed be 50 kilometers on, you know, whatever. But there were some good things in that Vision Zero report, like looking at road design changes for Hastings, looking at I don't know how they described it, basically like a chicane kind of system that just kind of like slows people down naturally. You know, and more automated enforcement and things like that. I mean, we I've been very vocal on this. We spend a lot of money on police in Vancouver. We spend $500 million, 25% of the city budget. And, you know, there's no reason there should be a single, you know, fatality for pedestrians. And yet here we are. And then you look at things like, oh, enforcement's actually down. And that's really frustrating to me. But you know, I think the police are kind of against automated enforcement for obvious reasons. But, you know, I just think this whole thing becomes politicized. We need safer streets and we need cheaper transit. And, you know, you look at what Mamdani's done in New York, and you just do the damn thing. Just do it. And it works, you know. Yeah. So that's my stance.
Yeah, I mean, they are two separate motions, but like, I think what you're getting at is that it is holistic in a sense, advocating for accessible and equitable public transit while also looking at how roads can be safer. I mean, I've spoken about this with like, say, like the mayor of New Westminster, who they're adopting a Vision Zero approach as of late. And I, one of the cities that he really was basing the approach that they're taking on was like Hoboken, New Jersey, that hasn't had like a single road death in over a year. So like these things are possible is what you're saying, but it's just the political will needs to be there.
Yeah, everyone loves talking about Hoboken. It's real. I mean, like, you know, it's a real thing that they did. They went for it, and it just takes political will, you know. And like, I look at New Westminster, and they're leading on a lot of things. They're a small town, you know, but they're doing things that I wish Vancouver would be doing. And you know, shout out to Patrick Johnson and all the people, all the councillors in New West, like, you know, Nadine and Tasha and Ruby and Jamie McElroy, they're just doing really progressive things. And it's really frustrating that Vancouver seems to be kind of going in the opposite direction on a lot of different issues.
For the next question, I guess, do you see, say a low income transit pass does get implemented in Vancouver, do you see that as kind of just being like a first step or something that can kind of open the floodgates for more initiatives and ways to make transit more accessible?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the last step. I mean, I think, you know, I would love free transit for everyone. I mean, that's the goal, right? I mean, that's the end goal for me. I mean, I just think we're in a climate crisis, and I just think that people tend to forget that, even though it's, you know, it's on our doorstep every day. There's examples, and we need to do everything that we can to get people into transit. And it also, it just makes good economic sense. Moving workers around and having workers not, you know, pay so much money into transit means they have more money to put back into the local economy, into local shops and restaurants and services and things like that. It's just a no-brainer for me. So, you know, I think that's the end goal, but I mean, this is a good first step, you know, and hopefully it just starts this broader conversation. There's appetite in across BC for well-funded and affordable and safe and accessible transit. You know, I go to Union of British Columbia municipalities, as I mentioned before, and it's, you know, it's a topic that everyone talks about. So it's not the most important one. It's, you know, I think affordability and I think public safety are kind of top of mind. But, you know, just after that, I think, you know, having cheap transit is in there. So yeah, we'll see what TransLink does. We'll see, you know, if they can afford to do this, or we'll see if they make a report. But yeah, or we'll also see, you know, if other cities try and, you know, follow suit with like a pilot, like a free bus pilot or something, or, you know, because, you know, it's about time. And I know there's transit activists and aficionados, you know, that kind of frown on the idea of free transit. Just in terms of, you know, it has to be funded somehow, and I get that. And I've taken a few, you know, transportation classes. One was at SFU with Leanne Roderick, and it was great. And we definitely broached that subject a lot. And there's a book called Human Transit that we studied, and he's kind of the author of that book is kind of, you know, against it as well. So I understand the trepidation there in terms of like we don't want to sacrifice, you know, frequency and, you know, expansion of services, you know, for, you know, affordability essentially. I get that, but I think it can be done in a way where if we in general, you know, tax the more wealthy to fund, you know, things like transit, then we can have both. We can have free transit and we can have a glorious, safe transportation system that reaches all corners of our beautiful province.
I guess to end off this interview, what would you say are the next steps for this advocacy? Or what is the timeline like for the province getting involved with something like this?
That's a really good question, because like I've had a few motions, and oftentimes when it leaves council chambers, it's just kind of like into the ether a little bit, and it's like kind of out of my hands in a sense. You know, when I pass a motion, they don't go, okay, great, here, you know, like, we'll expect to hear from us in 6 months. Like, it just kind of goes into that kind of bureaucratic machine, and it comes back at some point. Maybe we'll get a report or something, maybe in the next year. Or, you know, I passed a motion recently on a really bright LED headlights, and again, road safety and public safety. And, you know, I was asked the same question. I'm like, I don't know, actually, you know, but it turns out Transport Canada actually did a survey where they released it across the country. A Bloc Québécois MP actually brought a parliamentary petition to ban these LED headlights. And then, of course, it went to the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, which just happened last week in Edmonton, where delegates from across Canada overwhelmingly voted to support, you know, changing the regulations on these bright LED headlights. So that's one thing where, like, I didn't know at first, but that there is this, it does happen. There is this sort of kind of slow churning thing that happens. And so, but even then, like, now after FCM is going to advocate now to Transport Canada to change the regulations. So it is kind of now out of my hands, but a lot of that's a bit, kind of a big feeling when you pass a motion in council. It's like, I don't know, now what? Like, what happens next? You know? And I am so new, right? So it's like, oftentimes it's like, okay, I guess now on to the next thing. And that's just it. Like, everything moves so fast, and I've got another four motions next council meeting, and then, you know, things like that. So it's just, things just move so fast, and you kind of forget that you actually passed motions. And actually, the Vision Zero, that thing that came the other day, that was a result of a motion that Councillor Maloney passed. It's like, oh, now we're getting, like, oh, now we're getting our motions come back as full reports. Or, like, there was one on cooling rights for that me and Councillor Maloney both authored. And that came back as a report, and it was looking at giving $1,000 fines to landlords who refuse renters to install air conditioning in their apartment, because that's been happening, you know. So, yeah, it's a bit of a slow process, but yeah, we'll see what happens, and I expect some movement around, you know, about a year from now.
All I can get is static or variations on the central musical rhythm.
I only wish there was some way we could tell it to shut up. It's driving me crazy. And it keeps getting louder.
We have no way of estimating the volume this creature can produce.
The only logical solution is to listen to CJSF 90.1 FM. They broadcast from Burnaby Mountain in British Columbia. Let's tune in now.
Garbage Day. You're out enjoying your daily walk when you come upon two children rummaging through a recycling bin. One of them catches your eye. You look away. Are you empathetic or apathetic? Don't let homelessness assumptions get in the way of homelessness solutions. Go to CanadaCanDoIt.ca. Help the Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness.
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Underrepresented music, local voices, and real people. You keep CJSF independent.
Thank you. Thank you.